In the town of Loshnik, not far from Lublin, there lived a man and his wife. His name was Chaim Nossim, hers Tybala. They had no children. Oh, not that the marriage was barren. Tybala had borne her husband a son and two daughters, but all three had died in infancy, one of whooping cough, one of scarlet fever, one of diphtheria. After that, Tybala's womb closed up, and nothing availed, neither prayers, nor spells, nor potions. Grief drove Chaim Nossim to withdraw from the world. He kept apart from his wife, he stopped eating meat, and no longer slept at home, but on a bench in the prayer house. Tybala owned a dry goods store, inherited from her parents, and she sat there all day with a yardstick on her right, a pair of shears on her left, and the woman's prayer book in Yiddish in front of her. Chaim Nossim, tall, lean, with black eyes and a wedge of beard, had always been a morose, silent man, even at the best of times. Tybala was small and fair, with blue eyes and a round face. Although punished by the Almighty, she still smiled easily, the dimples playing on her cheeks. She had no one else to cook for now, but she lit the stove or the tripod every day and cooked some porridge or soup for herself. She also went on with her knitting, now a pair of stockings, now a vest, or else she would embroider something on canvas. It wasn't in her nature to rail at fate or cling to sorrow. One day, Chaim Nossim put his prayer shawl and phylacteries, a change of underwear and a loaf of bread into a sack and left the house. Neighbors asked where he was going. He answered, "Wherever my eyes lead me." When people told Tybala that her husband had left her, it was too late to catch up with him. He was already across the river. It was discovered that he had hired a cart to take him to Lublin. Tybala sent a messenger to seek him out, but neither her husband nor the messenger was ever seen again. At 33, Tybala found herself a deserted wife. After a period of searching, she realized that she had nothing more to hope for. God had taken both her children and her husband. She would never be able to marry again. From now on, she would have to live alone. All she had left was her house, her store, and her belongings. The townspeople pitied her, for she was a quiet woman, kind-hearted and honest in her business dealings. Everyone asked, how did she deserve such misfortunes? But God's ways are hidden from man. Tybala had several friends among the town matrons whom she had known since childhood. In the daytime, housewives are busy with their pots and pans, but in the evening, Tybala's friends often dropped in for a chat. In the summer, they would sit on a bench outside the house, gossiping and telling each other stories. One moonless summer evening, when the town was as dark as Egypt, Tybala sat with friends on the bench telling them a tale she had read in a book bought from a peddler. It was about a young Jewish woman and a demon who had ravished her and lived with her as man and wife. Tybala recounted the story in all its details. The women huddled closer together, joined hands, spat to ward off evil, and laughed the kind of laughter that comes from fear. One of them asked, why didn't she exorcise him with an amulet? Not every demon is frightened of amulets, answered Tybala. Why didn't she make a journey to a holy rabbi? The demon warned her that he would choke her if she revealed the secret. Woe is me! May the Lord protect us. May no one know of such things, a woman cried out. I'd be afraid to go home now, said another. I'll walk with you, a third one promised. While they were talking, Elchananan, the teacher's helper, who hoped one day to become a wedding jester, happened to be passing by. Elchanan, 5 years a widower, had the reputation of being a wag and a prankster, a man with a screw loose. His steps were silent because the soles of his shoes were worn through and he walked on his bare feet. When he heard Tybala telling the story, he halted to listen. The darkness was so thick and the women so engrossed in the weird tale that they did not see him. This was a dissipated fellow, full of cunning, goatish tricks. On the instant, he formed a mischievous plan. After the women had gone, Elchanan stole into Tybala's yard. He hid behind a tree and watched through the window. When he saw Tybala go to bed and put out the candle, he slipped into the house. Tybala had not bolted the door. Thieves were unheard of in that town. In the hallway, he took off his shabby caftan, his fringe garment, his trousers, and stood as naked as his mother bore him. Then he tiptoed to Tyvola's bed. She was almost asleep, when suddenly she saw a figure looming in the dark. She was too terrified to utter a sound. "Who is it?" she whispered, trembling. Elkanah replied in a hollow voice, "Don't scream, Tyvola. If you cry out, I will destroy you. I am the demon Hormiza, ruler over darkness, rain, hail, thunder, and wild beasts. I am the evil spirit who espoused the young woman who you spoke about tonight. And because you told the story with such relish, I heard your words from the abyss and was filled with lust for your body. Do not try to resist, for I drag away those who refuse to do my will beyond the mountains of darkness to Mount Seir, into a wilderness where man's foot is unknown, where no beast dares to tread, where the earth is of iron and the sky of copper, and I robe them in thorns and in fire, among adders and scorpions, until every bone of their body is ground to dust and they are lost for eternity in the nether depths. But if you comply with my wish, not a hair of your head will be harmed, and I will send you success in every undertaking." Hearing these words, Tyvola lay motionless as in a swoon. Her heart fluttered and seemed to stop. She thought her end had come. After a while, she gathered courage and murmured, "What do you want of me? I am a married woman."
"Your husband is dead. I followed in his funeral procession myself."
The voice of the teacher's helper boomed out.
"It is true that I cannot go to the rabbi to testify and free you to remarry, for the rabbis don't believe our kind. Besides, I don't dare step across the threshold of the rabbi's chamber. I fear the holy scrolls, but I am not lying. Your husband died in an epidemic, and the worms have already gnawed away his nose. And even were he alive, you would not be forbidden to lie with me, for the laws of the Shulchan Aruch do not apply to us."
Hormiza, the teacher's helper, went on with his persuasions, some sweet, some threatening. He invoked the names of angels and devils, of demonic beasts and of vampires. He swore that Asmodeus, king of the demons, was his step-uncle. He said that Lilith, queen of the evil spirits, danced for him on one foot and did every manner of thing to please him. Shibta, the she-devil who stole babies from women in childbed, baked poppy seed cakes for him in hell's ovens, and leavened them with the fat of wizards and black dogs. He argued so long, adducing such witty parables and proverbs, that Tyvola was finally obliged to smile in her extremity. Hormiza vowed that he had loved Tyvola for a long time. He described to her the dresses and shawls she had worn that year and the year before. He told her the secret thoughts that came to her as she kneaded dough, prepared her Sabbath meal, washed herself in the bath, and saw to her needs at the outhouse. He also reminded her of the morning when she had wakened with a black and blue mark on her breast. She had thought it was the pinch of a ghoul, but it was really the mark left by a kiss of Hormiza's lips, he said. After a while, the demon got into Tybala's bed and had his will of her. He told her that from then on, he would visit her twice a week. On Wednesday, and on Sabbath evenings, for those were the nights when the unholy ones were abroad in the world. He warned her, though, not to divulge to anyone what had befallen her, or even hint of it. On pain of dire punishment, he would pluck out the hair from her skull, pierce her eyes, and bite out her navel. He would cast her into a desolate wilderness where bread was dung and water was blood, and where the wailing of Zalameveth was heard all day and night. He commanded Tyvola to swear by the bones of her mother that she would keep the secret to her last day. Tyvola saw that there was no escape for her. She put her hand on his thigh and swore an oath and did all that the monster bade her. Before Hormiza left, he kissed her long and lustfully. And since he was a demon and not a man, Tyvola returned his kisses and moistened his beard with her tears. evil spirit though he was, he had treated her kindly. When Hormizah was gone, Tybalt sobbed into her pillow until sunrise. Hormizah came every Wednesday night and every Sabbath night. Tybalt was afraid that she might find herself with child and give birth to some monster with tail and horns, an imp or a moon calf. But Hormizah promised to protect her against shame. Tybalt asked whether she needed to go to the ritual bath to cleanse herself after her impure days, but Hormizah said that the laws concerning menstruation did not extend to those who consorted with the unclean host. As the saying goes, may God preserve us from all that we can get accustomed to. And so it was with Tybalt. In the beginning, she had feared that her nocturnal visitant might do her harm, give her boils or elf locks, make her bark like a dog or drink urine, and bring disgrace upon her. But Hormizah did not whip her or pinch her or spit on her. On the contrary, he caressed her, whispered endearments, made puns and rhymes for her. Sometimes he pulled such pranks and babbled such devil's nonsense that she was forced to laugh. He tugged at the lobe of her ear and gave her love bites on the shoulder, and in the morning she found the marks of his teeth on her skin. He persuaded her to let her hair grow under her cap, and he wove it into braids. He taught her charms and spells, told her about his night brethren, the demons with whom he flew over ruins and fields of toadstools, over the salt marshes of Sodom and the frozen wastes of the Sea of Ice. He did not deny that he had other wives, but they were all she-devils. Tybalt was the only human wife he possessed. When Tybalt asked him the names of his wives, he enumerated them, Nama, Maklaf, Aft, Kula, Zlucha, Nafka, and Chaima, seven altogether. He told her that Nama was black as pitch and full of rage. When she quarreled with him, she spat venom and blew fire and smoke through her nostrils. Maklaf had the face of a leech, and those whom she touched with her tongue were forever branded. Alf loved to adorn herself with silver, emeralds, and diamonds. Her braids were of spun gold. On her ankles, she wore bells and bracelets. When she danced, all the deserts rang out with her chiming. Chulda had the shape of a cat. She meowed instead of speaking. Her eyes were green as gooseberries. When she copulated, she always chewed bear's liver. Zlucha was the enemy of brides. She robbed bridegrooms of potency. If a bride stepped outside alone at night during the seven nuptial benedictions, Zlucha danced up to her, and the bride lost the power of speech or was taken by a seizure. Nafka was lecherous, always betraying him with other demons. She retained his affections only by her vile and insolent talk, which delighted his heart. Chaima should have, according to her name, been as vicious as Nama, should have been mild, but the reverse was true. Chaima was a she-devil without gall. She was forever doing charitable deeds, kneading dough for housewives when they were ill, or bringing bread to the homes of the poor. Thus Hormizah described his wives, and told Tybalt how he disported himself with them, playing tag over roofs and engaging in all sorts of pranks. Ordinarily, a woman is jealous when a man consorts with other women, but how can one human be jealous of a female devil? Quite the contrary. Hormizah's tales amused Tybalt, and she was always plying him with questions. Sometimes he revealed to her mysteries no mortal may know about God, his angels and seraphs, his heavenly mansions and the seven heavens. He also told her how sinners, male and female, were tortured in barrels of pitch and cauldrons of fiery coals, on beds studded with nails and in pits of snow, and how the black angels beat the bodies of the sinners with rods of fire. The greatest punishment in hell was tickling. Hormizah said, there was a certain imp in hell by the name of Lekish. When Lekish tickled an adulteress on her soles or under the arms, her tormented laughter echoed all the way to the island of Madagascar. In this way, Hormizah entertained Tybalt all through the night. And soon it came about that she began to miss him when he was away. The summer night seemed too short, for Hormizah would leave soon after cockcrow. Even winter nights were not long enough. The truth was that she now loved Hormizah, and though she knew a woman must not lust after a demon, She longed for him day and night. Although Elchanan had been a widower for many years, matchmakers still tried to marry him off. The girls they proposed were from mean homes, widows and divorcees, for a teacher's helper was a poor provider, and Elchanan had besides the reputation of being a shiftless ne'er-do-well. Elchanan dismissed the offers on various pretexts. One woman was too ugly, the other had a foul tongue, the third was a slattern. The matchmakers wondered, how could a teacher's helper who earned 9 groschen a week presume to be such a picker and a chooser? And how long could a man live alone? But no one can be dragged by force to the wedding canopy. Achonanan knocked around town, long, lean, tattered, with a red, disheveled beard and a crumpled shirt, with his pointed Adam's apple jumping up and down. He waited for the wedding jester, Reb Zekela, to die so that he could take over his job. But Reb Zekela was in no hurry to die. He still enlivened weddings with an inexhaustible flow of quips and rhymes, as in his younger days. He tried to set up on his own as a teacher for beginners, but no householder would entrust his child to him. Mornings and evenings, he took the boys to and from the cheder. During the day, he sat in Reb Itchela's, the teacher's courtyard, idling, whittling pointers or cutting out paper decorations, which were used only once a year at Pentecost, or modeling figurines from clay. Not far from Tabela's store, there was a well, and he came there many times a day to draw a pail of water or to take a drink, spilling the water over his red beard. At these times, he would throw a quick glance at Tabela. Tabela pitied him. Why was the man knocking about all by himself? He would say to himself each time, "Woe, Tibola, if you knew the truth." Achonan lived in a garret in the house of an old widow who was deaf and blind. The crone often chided him for not going to the synagogue to pray like other Jews. For as soon as he had taken the children home, he said a hasty evening prayer and went to bed. Sometimes the old woman thought she heard the teacher's helper get up in the middle of the night and go off somewhere. She asked him where he wandered at night, but Elchanan told her that she had been dreaming. The women who sat on benches in the evenings knitting socks and gossiping spread the rumor that after midnight, Elchanan turned into a werewolf. Some women said he was consorting with a succubus. Otherwise, why should a man remain so many years without a wife? The rich men would not trust their children to him any longer. He now escorted only the children of the poor and seldom ate a spoonful of hot food, but had to content himself with dry crusts. Achanan became thinner and thinner, but his feet remained as nimble as ever. With his lanky legs, he seemed to stride down the street as though on stilts. He must have suffered constant thirst, for he was always coming down to the well. Sometimes he would merely help a dealer or a peasant to water his horse. One day, when Tibola noticed from the distance how his caftan was torn and ragged, she called him into her shop. He threw a frightened glance and turned white. "I see your caftan is torn," said Tibola. "If you wish, I will advance you a few yards of cloth. You can pay it off later, 5 pennies a week." "No." "Why not?" Tibola asked in astonishment. "I won't haul you before the rabbi if you fall behind. You'll pay when you can." "No." Again, he quickly walked out of the store, fearing she might recognize his voice. In summertime, it was easy to visit Tibola in the middle of the night. Elchanan made his way through back lanes, clutching his caftan around his naked body. In winter, the dressing and undressing in Tibola's cold hallway became increasingly painful. But worst of all were the nights after a fresh snowfall. He was worried that Tibola or one of the neighbors might notice his tracks. He caught cold and began to cough. One night he got into Tibola's bed with his teeth chattering. He could not warm up for a long time. Afraid that she might discover his hoax, he invented explanations and excuses. But Tibola neither probed nor wished to probe too closely. She had long discovered that the devil had all the habits and frailties of a man. Hormiza perspired, sneezed, hiccuped, yawned. Sometimes his breath smelled of onions, sometimes of garlic.
His body felt like the body of her husband, bony and hairy, with an Adam's apple and a navel. At times, Hormizah was in a jocular mood. At other times, a sigh broke from him. His feet were not goose feet, but human, with nails and frost blisters. Once Tybalt asked him the meaning of these things, and Hormizah explained, "When one of us consorts with a human female, he assumes the shape of a man. Otherwise, she would die of fright." Yes. Tybalt got used to him and loved him. She was no longer terrified of him or his impish antics. His tales were inexhaustible, but Tybalt often found contradictions in them. Like all liars, he had a short memory. He had told her at first that devils were immortal. But one night he added, "What will you do if I die?" "But devils don't die. They are taken to the lowest abyss." Ugh. That winter there was an epidemic in town. Foul winds came from the river, the woods, and the swamps. Not only children, but adults as well were brought down with the ague. It rained and it hailed. Floods broke the dam on the river. The storms blew off an arm of the windmill. On Wednesday night, when Hormizah came into Tybalt's bed, she noticed that his body was burning hot, but his feet were icy. He shivered and moaned. He tried to entertain her with talk of she-devils, of how they seduced young men, how they cavorted with other devils, splashed about in the ritual bath, tied elf flocks in old men's beards. But he was weak and unable to possess her. She had never seen him in such a wretched state. Her heart misgave her. She asked, "Shall I get you some raspberries with milk?" Hormizah replied, "Such remedies are not for our kind." "Well, what do you do when you get sick?"
"We itch and we scratch."
He spoke little after that. When he kissed Tybalt, his breath was sour. He always remained with her until cockcrow, but this time he left early. Tybalt lay silent, listening to his movements in the hallway. He had sworn to her that he flew out of the window, even when it was closed and sealed. But she heard the door creak. Tybalt knew that it was sinful to pray for devils, that one must curse them and blot them from memory. Yet she prayed to God for Hormizah. She cried out in anguish, "There are so many devils. Let there be one more." On the following Sabbath, Tybalt waited in vain for Hormizah until dawn. He never came. She called him inwardly and muttered the spells he had taught her, but the hallway was silent. Tybalt lay benumbed. Hormizah had once boasted that he had danced for Tubal Khan and Enoch, and they had sat on the roof of Noah's Ark, licked the salt from the nose of Lot's wife, and plucked Ahasuerus by the beard. He had prophesied that she would be reincarnated after 100 years as a princess, and that he, Hormizah, would capture her with the help of his slaves, Chittim and Tachtim, and carry her off to the palace of Bashemath, the wife of Esau. But now, he was probably lying somewhere ill, a helpless demon, a lonely orphan, without father or mother, without a faithful wife to care for him. Tybalt recalled how his breath came rasping like a saw when he had been with her last. When he blew his nose, there was a whistling in his ear. From Sunday to Wednesday, Tybalt went about as one in a dream. On Wednesday, she could hardly wait until the clock struck midnight, but the night went, and Hormizah did not appear. Tybalt turned her face to the wall. The day began, dark as evening. Fine snow dust was falling from the murky sky. The smoke could not rise from the chimneys. It spread over the roofs like ragged sheets. The rooks cawed harshly. Dogs barked. After the miserable night, Tybalt had no strength to go to her store. Nevertheless, she dressed and went outside. She saw 4 pallbearers carrying a stretcher. From under the snow-swept coverlet protruded the blue feet of a corpse. Only the sexton followed the dead man. Tybalt asked who it was, and the sexton answered,
Elchanan, the teacher's helper. A strange idea came to Tybalt. To escort Elchanan, the feckless man who had lived alone and died alone on his last journey. Who would come to the store today? And what did she care for business? Tybalt had lost everything. At least she would be doing a good deed. She followed the dead on the long road to the cemetery. There she waited while the gravedigger swept away the snow and dug a grave in the frozen earth. They wrapped the teacher's helper in a prayer shawl and a cowl, placed shards on his eyes, and stuck between his fingers a myrtle twig that he would use to dig his way to the Holy Land when the Messiah came. Then the grave was closed, and the gravedigger recited the Kaddish. A cry broke from Tybalt. This Elchanan had lived a lonely life, just as she did. Like her, he left no heir. Yes, Elchanan, the teacher's helper, had danced his last dance. From Hormiz's tales, Tybalt knew that the deceased did not go straight to heaven. Every sin creates a devil, and these devils are a man's children after his death. They come to demand their share. They call the dead man father and roll him through forest and wilderness until the measure of his punishment is filled and he is ready for purification in hell. From then on, Tybalt remained alone, doubly deserted by an ascetic and by a devil. She aged quickly. Nothing was left to her of the past except a secret that could never be told and would be believed by no one. There are secrets that the heart cannot reveal to the lips. They are carried to the grave. The willows murmur of them. The rooks caw about them. The gravestones converse about them silently in the language of stone. The dead will awaken one day, but their secrets will abide with the Almighty and his judgment until the end of all generations.
Isaac Basheva Singer's tale, Tybalt and Her Demon, was read by Cynthia Harris.